Hello there. Yes, I'm Phil from Route 6. We do lots of things. We build facilities. We built your facility. And we do training as well. There's a few other things we do, and sales and tech support and things like that. But today's session is PSE and TV deliverables. So I don't know how much you guys are getting ready for the DPP swap over in October. Come October this year, most broadcast facilities and the broadcasters they deliver to will be having to comply to this new standard, the DPP standard, part of which is PSE, photosensitive epilepsy detection for television. So along with all the other things that you know about for QC, so audio loudness measurements, video levels, all those kind of things, there's also this idea of PSE is becoming very important. And PSE has been around for a while. Famously, in the late 90s in Japan, there was an episode of Pokemon, which apparently sent a load of Japanese kids to hospital with seizures. And I've got a clip of that on my laptop, and we'll be playing that afterwards. I expect you all to stare very hard at it, and we'll see if NBCU's finest gets phased by that. But it's all that stuff. It's flashing. It's all the things that might, in the words of the Ofcom specification, cause harm to a viewer. And that's considered very bad form, to broadcast stuff that might cause harm to people, that might cause somebody to have a seizure or a fit. And it's what we're getting very hot on. Now, if you know anything about PSE, you will no doubt have heard the word Harding. Graham Harding is a well-known expert in epilepsy, and he's the guy who's done most of the sort of the work academically on the subject. And he has a company who produce a PSE detector called the Harding FPA, Flash Pattern Analyzer. And for a long time, that's been considered the de facto standard within the industry. And the BBC, Red Bee, Channel 4, lots of people use the Harding as their means of measuring PSE. However, the problem is that Harding tests for a bunch of extra things than Ofcom requires. Ofcom is the legal body in Britain that regulates broadcasting, and Ofcom has a bunch of specifications as to what you're meant to test for PSE, how many flashes per second, and how much flashiness, and all that kind of stuff, whereas Harding tests for a bunch of extra stuff that Ofcom doesn't call for. And so as a consequence, you can deliver material that's entirely legal, that is entirely compliant with Ofcom, that fits in with the DPP vision of how we should deliver files for television deliverables, but isn't in accordance with Harding. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And from the first session with your colleagues earlier, I get the impression that's a big deal for you guys, that your American facility, Dry Creek, is that what they're called? Apparently they use Harding, and Harding can, in often cases, can be more aggressive than an Ofcom tester, and you use VidChecker for Ofcom testing. However, in an effort to try and match Harding, VidChecker has a bunch of options in it that try and ape what Harding does. Harding is a closed system, and nobody really knows what he's testing for. So when he says, I'm testing for regular patterning, nobody really knows what that means. But hopefully, as the DPP comes upon us in October this year, and we start getting all more kind of centralised around the Ofcom specification, the differences between Harding and everybody else will hopefully disappear. So we're going to go through those differences, what you need to be looking for, both from a pictorial point of view and also what the automatic file-based tester will be testing for, and how to interpret and analyse the reports that come out of VidChecker relating to the material you've looked at. And so there's a little thing I nicked from Wikipedia. And it turns out that in our modern world, television is the place where PSE is most prevalent. That's the place where people who suffer from fitting and seizures from flashiness, that's where they're most likely to get it from. Not exclusively so. I went to a school that had a very long driveway, and the road that led up to this driveway had regularly planted trees along it. And this road, in local legend, was supposedly a haunted road, a cursed road, if you will, because there were far too many traffic accidents on it than the statistics would suggest. It was a sort of a mile-long stretch of road that had a few traffic accidents every year, and nobody really knew why, except for this idea that it was a haunted road. And eventually, somebody figured out that the poplar trees that were planted down one side of the road were so regularly spaced that at 5 o'clock in the evening, when the sun was low in the sky and people were driving home from work, the flashing of the sun through the trees was enough in some people to trigger a seizure. And when the council cut down one tree in every three, so that the trees were now no longer so regularly spaced, all of a sudden the following year there weren't the same number of accidents on the road. So PSE is known outside of film and television, but it's where it's most prevalent in film and television. That's where the medical sort of literature mostly identifies it as happening. And it's the case in broadcast television, not so much in cinemas, because in a cinema, the brightness of the picture you're seeing on the screen is a tiny fraction of what it is coming off the front of a television. But a bit in cinema, there have been instances. And we're starting to get to the point now where video on demand and web services are having to comply to PSE as well. So we'll talk a bit about that. As I mentioned earlier, there's other standards like R128 for audio loudness. That's part of the DPP specification. And you guys, no doubt, when things go off to audio, have to conform to R128. And there's R103, which is the specification for video levels. And again, no doubt, when you're staring at a Tektronix scope in your edit suite or in your ingest room, that's the kind of thing you're thinking about. You're thinking about R103 levels. And those things can be judged by looking at a piece of test equipment. Whereas PSE detection is very hard. I mean, you can look at a piece of footage, you can say, that's probably going to fail Harding, that's probably going to fail VidChecker, but it's actually really hard to know for sure what passes and what fails. So there's a still frame from the now infamous episode of Pokemon. If I find that clip, and as I say, if I ask you all to stare very hard at the screen, just as a by the by, all the test footage we're going to look at today, all the documents from the DPP, from Ofcom, all the templates for VidChecker, all that kind of stuff is on those memory sticks, along with Coldplay's back catalogue and 5 series of Breaking Bad. No, that's not. But grab those sticks because they've got all the good stuff on them. And if you're very, very bored this weekend, you've got some reading. So let me just find... Here we go. So watch this clip and see if you can spot the offending sequence. It's not very hard. Look at that. You can understand why that would upset people, but it's that very sort of red flashing in that bit there that caused so much trouble, supposedly, in Japan. And ever since, we've had to take seriously this idea of flashing in television. So the whole idea of measuring for PSE, for trying to trap potentially harmful material that will cause trouble, centres around this idea of a flash event. And this is a paragraph from the Ofcom guidance notes. And interestingly, it's in a section that's entitled Harm and Offence. So all the things about profanity and things like that are lumped together with things that can potentially cause harm to people. But this is the real nub of the matter. A potentially harmful flash occurs when there is a pair of opposing changes in luminance, so the overall brightness of the picture, i.e. an increase in luminance followed by a decrease, or vice versa, so a very dark frame going to a very bright frame, or a very bright frame going to a very dark frame. And if that increase or decrease is of more than 20 candelas per meter squared on an overall average picture level of 160 candelas per meter squared, that's defined as a flash event. So the more astute amongst you might be saying to yourself, well, I've got some numbers going on here. What's this all about? And candelas per meter squared, that's a measurement of overall brightness of something, which is fine because that's what triggers seizures. Bright flashing is what triggers seizures. But the problem is that there's no way of knowing how bright a particular screen is. That the screens in your edit suites here, they'll be set up so that the peak white, very bright parts of the picture, are giving out about 80 candelas per meter squared. That's kind of the specification. If you talk to Russell or Reese or any of your other engineers, that's what they'll say. And that's mostly how grading and edit monitors are set up. But if you go into a big box superstore to buy a telly, the peak white on that will be 400 candelas per meter squared. It'll be many times brighter. And so immediately, it's very hard. How do we square this circle? How do we take these figures that Ofcom are giving us and make sense of that in terms of a measurable standard that when you're sitting in your edit suite, you can know about? Well, as ever, there's... there's a graph to show us. But before we get to that, let's just, these three frames here are taken from a bit of BBC News footage. And there's the first frame, second frame, third frame. And immediately you notice it's kind of a paparazzi photograph situation here. A flash gun has gone off on the middle frame, and the third frame is very, very similar to the first frame. In fact, were it not for the slight movement of the lower third, you might assume that it was the same frame. But going from frame one to frame two to frame three, you can see there's quite a difference between the first, second, and third frame. And if you look up at the histogram, top right, you'll see that that's quite a considerable change in overall picture level. You know, that's kind of definitely, well, it's maybe a third or something like that, you know, that it's got brighter in that single frame. And so going back to our Ofcom specification here, you know, paragraph three, whatever, that's an isolated flash. That's a flash event, if you will. That's something that we need to pay attention to. And in fact, if we have more than three of those within 25 frames, within a second of video, then we're in trouble. That's not allowed. A single flash is allowed, two flashes are allowed, but once you've got three flashes contained within a 25-frame sequence, within a second of video, that's a problem, and that's going to get a fail. But as mentioned, Ofcom speaks very much about candelas per meter squared, how bright the screen is in the edit suite or in the you know, Currys or Dixons or wherever you bought your telly. And there we've got a typical kind of edit suite on the left there and a typical kind of big box superstore selling big 55-inch plasmas. And they really are, you know, chalk and cheese. They're two entirely different environments. We've got a monitor on one side, which is considerably dimmer than it is on the other side. And so how do we relate, you know, the Ofcom figures of 20 candelas per meter squared to something I can talk meaningfully about in my edit suite? And the thing that comes to our rescue is this graph here. So what Ofcom essentially say is, we'll assume that for the purposes of PSE testing, that the brightest screen is about 200 candelas per meter squared. So about a bit more than two and a bit times brighter than an edit suite screen, and about half of what the brightness is of a shop-bought plasma television. So from that, and we know the requirement is 20 candelas per meter squared over a quarter of the display, and we know the overall peak white, as defined by Ofcom, is 200 candelas per meter squared. We're now dealing with a flash that's something akin to 10% difference. That's not very much, is it? You think about 10% difference in luminance. That's you know, that you kind of think that must happen all the time. And looking at these three pictures here, you know, the first picture, the second picture where the paparazzi's flash gun goes off, and the third picture, that's definitely more than 10%. Look at the histogram. That's you know, maybe 50% difference in overall illumination level between those three pictures. And so that's very definitely a flash event. That's very definitely the kind of thing that we're worried about. And as, you know, we go back to the Ofcom spec, we're allowed one of those. In fact, we're allowed two of those. We're even allowed three of those, but more than three of those within a one-second period, and we're into violation territory. We're going to get failed. Now, already talked about the Ofcom specification, which is the legal requirement in this country, and the thing that the DPP are very hot on. That's what they say they want you to deliver to. But here's a couple of screen grabs from Harding. And if you've been in the industry at all, you will probably have dealt with Harding. Anybody? You don't have Harding here in this building, do you? But have you worked elsewhere where you do have to deal with Harding testers? Well, I mean, if you haven't, the next job you go to, you definitely will have to. Harding is pretty ubiquitous throughout the industry, which kind of makes this all sort of doubly difficult because it's not what Ofcom are now calling for. I was a tech supervisor on the first few years of Big Brother, and it was the first show I'd ever worked on where we had to conform, we had to deliver with Ofcom PSE in mind. Channel 4 were getting quite hot on it at the time. And the piece of equipment we used to use then was a real-time baseband PSE tester, I think called a Flash Gordon, fantastic name, Flash Gordon. And it would sit and it would just watch the video in the edit suite. It would sit in the same feed that went to the editor's monitor. And when it saw the three flashes within 25 frames, it would honk a little alarm and it would freeze the time code. And the editor would then at least have the chance to go back and do something about that sequence on his timeline. He'd be able to go and, you know, trim a couple of frames off start and end. He'd be able to slow the sequence down. He'd be able to reduce the luminance. There's a few tricks that editors do to get around flashing images. The problem with Ofcom, with Harding, is that for a very, very long time, it was a file-based tester. You had to submit the whole file of a finished program to it, and it would come back and say, oh, it's failed, and there's the time code. And so what, with a real-time tester, was a very simple process of going around the loop a couple of times in the edit suite, now becomes an interaction between the editor, the machine room, the operator, and back again. And so it's not really very suitable for fast turnaround programs. But we're moving very much to file-based deliverables. You know, how many times do you release videotapes anymore? Does the videotapes leave your building for deliverables anymore? Probably not. And it's okay, maybe this week, but, you know, not for much longer. But as we move towards a file-based delivery workflow, the DPP schema and the metadata that goes with that will become very much the standard that we all have to work to. And here is a screen grab from the DPP specification for PSE deliverables. And what you notice is, although the DPP say, at a minimum, we want Ofcom, they actually say, all we really want is for you to tell us what tester you used and what version of the algorithm you used, and whether it was a pass or a fail. So maybe you're in a facility where they have Harding, and that's fine, you can use Harding. Of course, Harding's a bit more aggressive than the other testers, and so things will tend to fail more with Harding than they do with the other testers. But so long as you're using a manufactured tester and an algorithm which is approved by DPP, and there's a list there, it's out of the DPP specification, which you'll find on the memory sticks if you take one afterwards. So long as you conform to one of those testers with one of those algorithms, it's all good. So you might say to yourself, well, that's fantastic. You know, we're a facility that's got Harding. We'll just keep using Harding. Of course, your editors might have something to say about that because Harding tends to fail a lot more material than the others do. But in your case, with VidChecker, VidChecker can be set to conform exactly to the Ofcom requirements, or it can be set to be a bit more aggressive and a bit more Harding-like. And as far as I can tell from your colleagues, that seems to be a lot of your problems, the fact that you've got an American facility that's testing entirely with Harding, and you're having to prep things using VidChecker, and that's where the mismatch is. So I think it's probably something for your management to figure out, but that's why there's a discrepancy between the two. So before we go any further, I just wanted to show you a couple of clips which I grabbed off air, which kind of show just how problematic PSE can be. So these are from last year, from when Prince, what was his name? The baby that was born? I'm not really a royalist.
The news of the birth was greeted by cheers here at the hospital. And our royal correspondent, Nicholas Wilshaw, now looks at the story of the day.
So here we go, look at that. As the guy comes out, it's like every other frame is a flash frame. And, you know, if you spent any time looking at PSE material, you'll know immediately that this is going to fail. This is a problem. So that's the BBC. This was a similar thing on Sky. Now, it's interesting to note how they prefaced the report on Sky.
Royal correspondent Paul Harrison contains flash photography.
So that's just bear those two examples in mind, and we'll look at what Al Jazeera did with it.
So Cambridge has given birth to a baby boy, so now become a third in line to the throne. Some will get going.
I suppose above all, it's a wonderful moment for a warm and loving couple who are a brand new.
So all three of those clips, you know, paparazzi footage, lots of flashing, lots of stuff you'd think would be problematic. So I'm now going to fire up VidChecker, which is the tool I believe you guys use, and we'll just submit those clips. Well, first of all, we'll build a template, and we'll submit those clips and see what it makes of them. So let's just make a new template. We'll call it PSE NBCU. That should do. And of course, we don't want to check anything other than PSE, because this is not like a deliverable template. This is just testing for photosensitive epilepsy. So we go down to the bottom there, turn on flashing. And the first thing you'll notice is that there are several things that have come sort of pre-checked. These two things down here, check for potentially harmful regular patterns, and check for saturated red flashing. These are both outside of the Ofcom spec, but they are, however, part of what Harding does. So if you want to configure your vid checker to be a bit Harding-like in the way it behaves, have those two turned on. But if all you want to do is check to the Ofcom specification because you're producing a DPP deliverable, this one here, standard, covering 25% of the picture, three flashes per second, 20 candelas per meter either way. So that's just a little summary of the specification we saw on the DPP spec. It's exactly the words we've got there. That's them put into the template there. So long as we've enabled flashing and we've set it to standard with those two things turned off, then we are testing to what the DPP requires. That's a standard kind of PSE test. So let's save the template. We just check that there's no audio checks going on or general checks. I think we're all good. Actually, if I just go back there, one of the things you'll notice is check for potentially harmful regular patterns. And that's kind of where Harding's made his name. That regular patterns like waves on the water or a camera panning across a fence, they're the kind of regular patterns which Harding tells us that they can cause epilepsy as well, but they're not part of the Ofcom spec. I've got a friend who works at Red Bee, and he is currently supervising the prep of all the old BBC programmes for the relaunch of the iPlayer come November this year, where they're going to make a whole bunch of stuff from the 80s available in the iPlayer. And one of the programmes that fails the Harding every time is Grange Hill. Do you remember the animated sequence at the start of Grange Hill with a sausage? You remember that? Yeah. Apparently that's a Harding fail. But if there was any bit of video where millions of kids have sat 4 inches away from it watching it, you know, that's got to be it, hasn't it? That's got to be the piece of test footage that shows that regular patterning isn't as harmful as we all assume it is, or as Mr. Harding assumes it is. Now, the thing you also have to bear in mind when talking about Harding against VidChecker and other PSE detectors is that less than half of Harding's work is within television and film, where we work. Most of his business is in the realm of signage, digital signage. So you're at the petrol station, you know, buying your petrol, or you're at the post office waiting to mail something, and there's a big 40-inch plasma by your head. Those people are very, very aware of PSE. It's one thing to have stuff broadcast into your living room where you're sitting in a nice, relaxed environment watching it. You obviously don't want that to cause a fit in somebody, but it's doubly worse if you've gone to a public place like a post office or a petrol station, and the footage that you never asked to be shown to you causes you to have an epileptic seizure. That's doubly bad. So the people in the digital signage industry have been aware of this for a long time, and that's really where Mr. Harding makes most of his money, in digital signage. So that's one of the reasons why we start seeing these things creeping into television tests where they're not really required. So, you know, just to stress that if you want to test to the Ofcom specification for DPP deliverables, and I know you guys have got this kind of contention between what you turn out and what the guys at Dry Creek are doing, but this is really what you should be testing to. So we've made our template, we've saved our template, and now I'm going to submit some of those clips to the template. So there we go, it's PSE NBCU, that's the template we just created. Let's find those flashing sequences there. So there's the Sky News one. Submit that. Start the task. And what else was there? There's the BBC News one. Submit that. Start the task. And there was that Al Jazeera. Submit that. Start the task. And go to the task monitor. And the great thing about VidChecker is you can see it building the report as it's going along. So it's already finished the Sky one. And if we go into that, well, what a surprise. It found lots of flash events in there. And there's the time code, in and out frames, and it tells us up to 9 flashes per second. Remember, 3 flashes per second is the limit of at least 20 candelas per meter squared, covering 60 to 78% of the picture. So that little sequence there between 12 seconds, 15 frames, and 14 seconds and 23 frames, that really is in quite gross violation. You know, we can see that what would be allowed is 3 flashes covering 25% of the picture. This found 9 flashes covering most of the picture. So that's quite a, a failed sequence there. And in fact, it goes on, and you know, there's quite a lot of sequences within that video that failed. So let's go back up and see how the BBC failed, how the BBC fared. And not as bad. There was obviously that clip we saw towards the end of the piece, you know, 2 minutes and 7 seconds in, through to 2 minutes and 11 seconds in, where the guy comes out of the hospital and the paparazzi flashes go off. But it seemed that the BBC clip was a lot better restrained than the Sky clip. And if we go back and look at the last clip, the Al Jazeera clip, rather splendidly, even though it's much the same scenario, much the same kind of footage, they clearly managed to cut their piece so that it doesn't violate Ofcom at all. And there we go. No harmful flashes were detected. Tested too, there's the specification. So, you know, you can argue that, you know, we're sort of hostages to fortune and it's very hard to test for these things. But actually, well-edited stuff can avoid falling foul of PSE testing. So there's just one more piece I wanted to show you. And this is, I don't know if you've ever heard of this young singer called Violetta. She's the kind of, she's the sort of South American Miley Cyrus, or Miley Cyrus before she went off the rails. And this is a bit from the Disney Channel. And just watch this and think to yourself, am I seeing any PSE violations in this? Not very long, thankfully. There's quite a few shots, aren't there, where you can see strobes, you can see things that you think might possibly cause a failure. Who's that sinister-looking bloke there in the audience? With all those tweenies. So let's submit that to VidChecker and see what VidChecker makes of that. And remember, there were quite a few things that I would have thought, oh, that's probably on the edge, that's probably going to fail, that's a bit too flashy. But it's looking good so far. I clearly need a faster laptop. But there we go. So again, that promo has obviously been edited, you know, with somebody who's got an eye on making sure it passes a PSE detector. That piece there is entirely within compliance, even though it looked as if it might have been a troublesome piece. So the one thing that Ofcom does allow for, particularly with news footage, particularly with fast turnaround things, is for them to be prefaced with a warning, you know, a warning board. So there's a photo from the iPlayer, contains flashing images. There's a screen grab from iPlayer on a phone, video contains flashing photography. And you saw at the start of the Sky clip, they gave a little verbal warning, didn't they, about flash photography. So clearly, you know, there are situations where it's unavoidable. Although, if you read the Ofcom specification, and it's on the sticks if you're very bored this weekend, you very much get the feeling what they're saying is, if this is fast turnaround news footage, if this is live sports footage, you preface it with a warning, and that's fine. But stuff that's got a post-production process behind it, where there's an expectation that it will have gone through a compliance procedure, there's really no excuse for it not passing. So, again, I mentioned already that in VidChecker's PSE template section, it's just that piece there that needs to be checked if you want to deliver to the Ofcom standards. And so there we can see that's the kind of the VidChecker summary of that and the same paragraph from Ofcom, just really to reinforce that point. And we already looked through the Ofcom results, through the VidChecker results, and what its web interface, and if you've set it to email out the results as a PDF, shows you when you get a very, you know, badly complied, very flashy piece of footage, and that's kind of what you're looking for. So I suppose that's really all my formal material. So it's question time now, and whatever really you want to ask about, as far as Ofcom and DPP and PSE on video deliverables goes. I mean, this is a very well-defined problem in terms of what a flash frame is, how many of them are allowed, and how close together they can be before it fails. It's very easy. Well, I say it's very easy. I'm sure I couldn't do it. But if you're Mr. VidChecker writing software and you're in the video testing software game, it's very easy for these guys to write software to detect this. It's not easy to write stuff to detect what Harding's testing for, because nobody knows what Harding tests for. So when you get into this whole conundrum with other facilities and other broadcasters where they say, oh, but our Harding tester says this, increasingly we're going to get to the point where we say, well, actually, you should be testing to Ofcom. You shouldn't be testing towards what Harding says. And in fact, if we go back to that slide that shows the approved devices that the DPP specification allows for, I'm sure as editors get more and more annoyed that their beautifully finished program or their beautifully finished promo or interstitial or commercial has failed because their facility tests to Harding and not to Ofcom, that it will become more and more likely that people are saying, actually, we're an Ofcom house now. We test with VidChecker. We test with Digimetrics Aurora or some other tester that works to the Ofcom specification. Well, it would be if they were dealing with analog video, but they're dealing with digital video. They're dealing with a file, so the numbers are there already, aren't they? The file doesn't kind of change because, you know, the computer hasn't been warmed up properly or the monitor's not been on for long enough or whatever. So this, we're into an age now where, you know, if you had an analog flash detector, then yes, you would have to calibrate that. Because you'd have to tweak the electronics in there so that they knew what peak white video looked like and what black looked like. But in the case of a file-based tester, yeah, that's all kind of done and dusted, isn't it? We know what black is, we know what white is, we know what all the colours in between are. And so once you've got a well-defined specification like the Ofcom spec, and you've got a software developer who knows his arse from his elbow and knows how to write the code to detect for that, it's a done deal kind of thing. Yeah. So these are the list of manufacturers and algorithms that are not exactly approved, but are recognised by the DPP. And if you're preparing your AS11 file for delivery to a DPP-compliant broadcaster, then, you know, whatever machine you're using to do all your metadata, which I think in your case, and in lots of cases, is something like Content Agent or Amberfin or something like that, one of those Digital Rapids, one of those machines, then that will take care of all that metadata. And it will write those XML entries into the metadata sidecar, as it's called, saying, yes, we tested this using VidChecker, and we used VidChecker version, you know, in your case, 5.7.6, I think I saw in your machine room, and I just had a look beforehand. I think on my laptop I'm running an earlier version. But, you know, that's all taken care of by the software as part of your DPP metadata workflow. The Digital Production Partnership, they're a not-for-profit industry body backed by the BBC, Channel 5, Channel 4, MTV, lots of other people. And essentially, come October this year, lots of those broadcasters are kind of handing over their compliance definition to the DPP. And so if you want to deliver to those broadcasters, you'll be doing it to a DPP specification. So it's coming, and I mean, you guys are obviously a particularly unusual example because you're sort of American and you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'm not sure whether you will be a DPP house come October. Do you know, Simon?
Not yet, but I think generally as an industry, the DPP spec, it's specification by committee, and it's a committee that has never really had to do it, which has been one of the major pitfalls, is that they've chosen some very sensible and understandable specs, but some of the other bits of it is just so bonkers as the other to the point where it's been a 2-year process to get the technology that can actually make the file specification they're asking for, let alone whether it's legal, whether it sends you off into fits. The actual file format that they've asked for in the end was pretty much impossible for 2 years, yet this group of people decided that's the way forward. But I think it's rolling in such dominance now that you are seeing ideas that they kicked off a couple of years ago becoming the norm, whether it's this country, Europe, the States. So as a benchmark, it's probably best to go to them in the sense that they're probably the worst, except if they're the most overzealous. So if you're able to meet their requirements, then they stand a pretty good chance that file, in our case, once it's hit Dry Creek, should meet anybody's spec, no matter what country they're putting it down for, albeit with, you know, parentesy differences.
The irony is that America, being a very litigious country, have actually had no specification for PSE. The Americans have not been concerned about this at all, really, until this year. There's a group in lobbying Congress in America at the moment to try and get broadcasters to take PSE seriously. And ironically, audio loudness, the Americans have been really hot on, and they mandated it a long time before we started to talk about it in this country. So in terms of audio lagness, which is another big thing as far as the DPP concerned and file-based deliverables, the Americans are ahead of us. But at the moment, there's no requirement in America for PSC testing. And so as a consequence, the Americans say, well, what do most of the industry use? It's a Harding tester. And, of course, they just use the Harding, they use the Harding because it's very common. But it's not what DPP Ofcom require in this country. So that's probably where a lot of your problems will originate, that mismatch between Harding testing and Ofcom DPP testing.
Is that just because Harding, it's not possible to articulate what the Harding tests for in this particular guidance?
Graham Harding is an acknowledged expert in the industry. He's probably done more for photosensitive epilepsy than anybody else. But I think, and the other side of it is that most of his business is not in television. It's in signage and things like that, or in research and things like that. And so consequently, his tester does what he thinks it should do, but it's a proprietary closed system, and he's never published the algorithm as to how it works. And so Mr. Tektronix, Mr. Sony, Mr. Vidchecker, they can't write an algorithm for their box to do what Harding does, because they don't know what he does. Vidchecker had a stab at it, and I know the developers there, and they tell me that essentially they bought a Harding themselves, they ran a bunch of material through it, and they tried to tweak an algorithm so that theirs would follow it, you know. But nobody really knows, which is an iniquity, really, because if you're a broadcaster, you should always have a choice of test equipment. You should always have a choice of where you buy your testing box from. You shouldn't have to buy from one particular manufacturer. That seems wrong, you know.
Yeah,
not sure. It's kind of inadvertently created and cornered its own market. Mm. It's phenomenal, really, looking at it. It's a business model. Great, grand, little dongle that's got a license on it. Is it worth touching on? It may be obvious, but what the sort of key fixes are. So if
yes,
people are getting stuff rejected regularly, or
so traditionally editors, when the Flash Gordon, which was a baseband PSC detector, which I think I've got a little picture, yeah, so there, that's a Flash Gordon there. That was a box that would just sit in line with the video that was going to the monitor in the edit suite, and it had a little timecode display on the front, and if it detected a violating sequence being played past, so as the editor was like, you know, sitting back and watching his timeline, you know, how good am I as an editor, look at this kind of thing. If the box saw a bit of video that was in violation, it would beep and it would freeze the timecode on its display, and the editor could then go, oh right, okay, that little sequence there, I need to do something about that. I need to trim off a frame at the start and the end of the sequence. I need to take off those flash frames there. I need to maybe wind the luminance down a bit to try and get it under the spec. Or I need to just slow it down by 10% so that it's not as flashy as it was before. And so editors had the option of doing a few things to try and reduce. And it's invariably just one shot that's in violation. And they could sit there and on their timeline, they could make some changes very quickly, just, you know, go back and play it back. And the box that was in their desk, you know, and they were cheap enough to have one in every edit suite, that would tell you if your sequence is in violation. I mean, that's great if you're detecting baseband video, your live video that you're watching on your monitor. Not so much if you've got an entirely file-based facility. But what several of our customers do with VidChecker is that if they see a sequence that they're a little bit worried about, if they see a sequence that they think, oh, is that going to pass or fail a PSE test, what they do is they mark into out on their Avid timeline, export as source, so if it's DNX media on their timeline, they get a little DNX reference file off of that, and then they drop that onto a watch folder on their shared storage, on their ISIS or whatever, which their VidChecker or their Harding or whatever other box they're using can see. And they've set up a watch folder on there so that when that arrives on the shared storage, VidChecker quickly kicks in, does a PSE test using a very simple template like the one we just made a few minutes ago. And it can then email back to the editor the PDF report saying, you know that clip you gave me 2 minutes ago, it's fine. Or, you know that clip you gave me, I'm sorry, you've got to do something about that. And so that seems like a very nice halfway house for an editor or a, you know, compliance operator to be able to do that, to be able to mark a little sequence, export a source, and have VidChecker do a quick test on that. And that's probably the best way for you guys to proceed if, you know, if you've got the stomach for it, I would have thought.
And then it is simply a matter of trying to increase the gap between flashes or drop down the brightness.
Yes. Because remember, what we're looking for is, you know, that's a flash event. You know, frame, 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 that's a flash event. And so, yeah, if you can lengthen the time, i.e. apply speed effects so that the clip is slightly slower, if you can cut into the clip so that maybe you've cut out one or two offending flashes, if you can reduce the luminance slightly by dropping a colour effect on it, then they're all things that might kind of bring you back under the specification so that clip is no longer an offending clip. But, yeah, end of the day, some things are just so bad, they'll always fail, and you might have to lose the shot.
I work in the compliance department, and sometimes we'll have a film which will have a lightning storm sequence, and it's really tricky to sort of actually change that. It goes from dark to bright lights. Sometimes you can do a smear, a sort of smear effect where you sort of just... But it just really can look quite bad, and you don't want to sort of change that, so you just end up having a warning, which is probably not quite what you're supposed to do.
Well, you're probably getting away with it now, but definitely come October, Ofcom says that's okay for fast turnaround news footage or sports OBs or whatever. If something's been sitting in a facility for a week, that's a no-no. You're not allowed to do that. Now, if we go back to the template for VidCheck, you'll notice with VidCheck, I don't know how much you drive VidChecker, but typically in a template you've got, do I check for something? Do I reject it if it's wrong? And on some things, there's a correction box as well. So we can correct chroma and black and RGB gamut levels, all the things that are sort of like traditional video QC problems. Or in the case of audio, in the case of an audio track, we can correct the loudness, the PPM peaks, and all that kind of stuff. That's all available as an auto correct feature. The guys at VidChecker tell me, and they told me not to tell anybody, but I'm sure if they didn't want anybody to know, they wouldn't have told me, is that the next release of VidChecker, they've got an automated correction feature coming. So in the next major release of VidChecker, which will be version 6, so I think you guys are running 5.7.6 down in your ingest room. But yeah, come version 6, they're going to have a checkbox here that says correct for flashing. And that will employ all those techniques that we've already mentioned, slowing down, reducing luminance, and smearing to try and make a better version of a flashy sequence. Now, obviously, in that situation, because you made changes to the video, you'd have to go back and eyeball it and make sure it was acceptable from a production point of view. Now, if you spin back 20 years to when video legalizers first came out, editors hated them because they made visible changes to the picture, and you wound up with tape-based material that was at least broadcastable. It wouldn't fail a QC when it went to the broadcaster. But those early model legalizers, they really would just rip the detail out of the picture and spoil the picture. Yeah, and so editors hated them, graders hated them, you know. But your modern video legalizer, like an iHeight or whatever, nobody dislikes those, do they? I mean, you've got one in your ingest room, haven't you? And, you know, it's a lifesaver. It means that you can automatically make video street legal and know that if you're delivering on a tape, you're not going to get it rejected. And I bet in the next couple of years, auto PSE correction will get good enough for just not worrying about it anymore. I bet we're just in a little period now when we have to pay a lot of attention to PSE, but give it a few years, 2 or 3 years or whatever, I bet the auto correction algorithms will get so good that we don't have to worry about it.
I think we're going to use that option well, because that's what we're going to actually want. Because it just gets in, it actually makes a file that corrects it, that makes it something else that we don't want to know, so then it's going to do it again.
So VidChecker, if you haven't bought any of the options on VidChecker, VidChecker will spit out an uncompressed file, yeah, which anything will read, but it's useless because you can't do anything with it because it's so blinking big. If you're an Avid DNX house, you can buy an option that where VidChecker will re-encode back to Avid, or it will re-encode back to ProRes, or whatever your spec is for your internal file format. So you might need to. They're not expensive, the options, like kind of £600, £800, that kind of money. Well, again, it's very much what does your broadcaster require. You know, you look at some of the channels on Sky, and you think there's no way any of that's gone via any kind of PSE detector. So it's very, very much down to broadcaster and what they specify. And, you know, Channel 5, for example, say Ofcom, and that's all they specify. So they don't specify Harding at all. They just specify Ofcom. The problem is that the word Harding has become a little bit like Hoover or fridge. It's a manufacturer that people just assume means PSE detector. But the truth of the matter is that it's not. Harding is testing for a lot more than is legally required. And so those broadcasters that require Harding are actually doing a bit of a disservice to the industry because they should be asking for the Ofcom spec rather than Harding, which goes much further than the Ofcom spec does. So, yeah, I don't know. Traditionally, ITV, for example, have been a lot more flexible, a lot more tolerant of, for example, very loud audio. So commercial breaks on ITV still violate EBUR 128, and they'll have to sort that out come October. I don't know what their policy on flashiness is. Don't know. But yeah, it's between you and your broadcaster, a very personal relationship that nobody else should comment on. As I say, all the test footage and the reports and a vid checker template and stuff are on those memory, on those USB sticks, as well as little sort of tasters of all our other training as well. So if you're kind of feeling like you'd like a bit of a refresher on video or an audio or colorimetry, you know, maybe you're going to start moving into grading stuff, then have a look at that, and it might you know, tickle your fancy as far as training goes. But yeah, I've come to the end of my prepared PSE stuff, so you know, just more questions, please. You're a much friendlier bunch than the last lot. They were really kind of on me about, you know, the difference between Harding and Ofcom, and why the hell the Americans don't, you know, do this and that and the other, you know, as if I know what the Americans are meant to do. I don't know.